Welcome to the Bulls Show, your look at the Chicago Bulls from a fan's perspective. I'm your host, Nils, and on the line, we have Chicagoan, diehard Bulls fan, and occasional contributor to bloggable.com, Zach Lee, a.k.a. Right Field Sucks on Twitter.
That would be me.
How's it going?
It's going great now. It's going great now. I was a little worried going into the game tonight, but feeling fine now and kind of on to the next, and it feels good to say that.
Right. I have to, before we started recording, I had to wipe the perspiration off my brow. And I was really concerned that your guest spot on the Bulls show wasn't going to happen because, you know, I wanted it to be a happy guest spot, right? And we've been talking about this the last maybe week or so, and we kept pushing it back a couple times because the Bulls just kept on losing. But they righted the ship tonight. A complete evisceration of the Bucks in Game 6, a whopping 54-point victory, the largest in Bulls playoff history, sending the Bucks fishing. Zach, what happened tonight?
Everything that needed to happen, and it's only a Bulls fan that could look at it from the perspective of disappointment in that this is what this team is capable of. And I think we all know that. It happens all the time. You know, there was the midseason crisis and, you know, Tibbs might get fired. And then all of a sudden there was a closed door meeting and they came out and it was a similar kind of evisceration. Not this many points, of course, but the same kind of play. And look, when the Bulls can defend the rim, when they play the way they do on a night like tonight, there's really, you know, they can compete with anybody. They can beat anybody in the league. And the problem is that you just don't see it consistently enough to think that they might be a contender.
The roller coaster of emotions really in the past, I want to say 72 hours, is just indicative of being a fan of this bipolar franchise, right? You know, they go up 3-0 and you're thinking, all right, we got a sweep on our hands. This is going to be great. We can get some rest before this big Cavs series, which of course we'll get into in a little bit. And then there's these letdowns the last couple of games 4 and 5, losing in pretty gut-wrenching fashion. But tonight, you basically had a Bulls team that was locked in and wanted to play to their potential. You know, all Bulls starters were in double figures. All Bulls starters had a plus-minus of plus 29 or higher, which is absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, it was absurd.
And basically, the Bucks just forgot how to play basketball. You know, they couldn't hold on to the ball. They looked like the Bulls. I joked on Twitter last game where it felt like the Bulls are trying to grab rebounds with their elbows. and tonight, the same could be said about the Bucks, who whenever they tried to throw an interior pass, they couldn't catch anything worth a damn. So it was nice to see that the Bulls were remembering who they were and actually played to the potential.
It's weird like that, right? Like, the 30 turnover game, it looked like you said, catching with your elbows. I tell friends, they look like they're trying to catch it with salad spoons. I don't understand, like, why it happened that way. And look, the Bucks are a team that can't score in the half court. So, you know, they have to score off turnovers. They have to break out. It's the only way they could compete with the Bulls. And so all you have to do is protect the ball, and you should be in good shape come the end of the game. And it's really, you know, this is an ongoing thing for the season. And I would ask your opinion. Every player in post-game press conferences speaks to, we just don't do things the way we used to. We need to make a better effort. But it's never specific. And so the only person who's been added to the team really that you can look to is Powell. And I'd ask you, do you blame Powell for the lapses that happened within the continuity of the team? Or do you think it's larger than that?
You know, I think it's a little bit larger than that. And, you know, I would be the first to throw Powell under the bus. I feel like my disdain for Powell has been pretty well documented on this podcast. it's one of those things where I think Powell's a good guy. I think he means well, but I think he's also very fraudulent on the basketball court. You know, he's the type of guy that will put up empty stats, is resigned to just using his height as kind of a defensive mechanism, if you will, in, you know, blocking shots. And you look at that and you're like, oh, well, you know, at least he's better than Boozer because he's actually challenging shots at the rim. But being a Powell supporter can be awfully frustrating. And I don't know if it's fair, despite, you know, my disdain towards him, it's fair to pinpoint all of the Bulls' lackadaisical or lackluster efforts on him. I don't think he's the type of guy that, you know, changes the culture of the team. I think it's more of a comprehensive, widespread issue, right?
Where, I would agree.
These guys came into the season like, look, we have a rejuvenated, Rejuvenated is probably not the right word, but a much improved Jimmy Butler. We have Derrick Rose, who's finally going to be healthy, and we got a future Hall of Famer in Pau Gasol. We probably don't need to do much on the defensive end because we probably can outscore teams. And I think there is some truth to that. As frustrating as it is, you know, watching this team night in and night out, ultimately I think that there might be a slight level of arrogance with this team. And I think we kind of saw that in game five where, you know, you had Jimmy who, you know, obviously is a cornerstone to this franchise at this point, now going to become a max player, which is kind of crazy for me to say if you told me that this was going to happen last year. But, you know, he's talking reckless to Giannis. You know, he's making the clamps gesture. And that's just something that's like, you know, Jimmy, chill. It's the first quarter of the game. Like, let's wait till you know this game is out of reach before we start talking shit. So
I love that though. Like, I don't feel like the Bulls, save for Noah. Noah is Noah. Like, there isn't enough of that swagger because of the Rose fear, the figuring each other out, the being the good guys thing. I don't quite know what that is. And look, you know, the Bucks were a limited team. I think there's a lot of respect to them. I think they're going to be extremely dangerous in years to come.
Absolutely.
Giannis needs to work on a jump shot that he can count on and kind of, you know, expand his game to the next level. But there's nobody who tries harder. He's an incredible defensive player. You know, Jabari coming back. I don't know about MCW. There's potential there. But again, they don't really have the shooting to hang out or hang with the Bulls. So, but, you know, respect where respect is due. They did whatever they could to get under the Bulls' skin. They did that Jason Kidd kind of, I guess, vaunted, you know, all-hands defense that he ran in Brooklyn the year before. So they were really effective in what they did. They took two more games than I thought they would off the Bulls. So credit to them. But again, it kind of falls at the Bulls' feet. You know, you have these incredibly talented players that game to game, you don't know what you're going to get. The thing is, though, you kind of know about 5 minutes into the game, you're like, this is level three Bulls. Like, Dunleavy's hitting shots and he's involved. Powell's gotten a couple good looks and has gone right to the basket. And then as soon as Noah hit a right-handed floater and a right-handed a layup, I was like, this is over. It was like maybe 6 minutes into the game. I'm like, this is completely over. There's nothing that can be done. It's all cylinders. And when it's all cylinders, man, it's just the best.
Yeah, you know, it was odd, to say the least, to see this Bulls team, or the iteration of this Bulls team, locked in and really ready to play. You know, they've had some pretty bad starts in the first five games of the series. You know, case in point, game five, they started the game, you know, down 9 points immediately. It's almost like they have a switch, right? Where historically, they've always been the team that's had to play harder than you to have any chance at winning. And now, because they're super talented, you know, they kind of rest on their laurels and think, okay, well, talent will probably win this game. Well, that's not the case in playoff basketball where everyone plays hard. And now they turned it up a notch, at least tonight, and it was refreshing to see. You know, I've said before on this podcast, I'm done cheering for the little engine that could Bulls. I am all about cheering for the super talented Bulls that can flip on a switch when they want to. And we saw that tonight to start the game, and they got out to an early, you know, 20-point lead in the first quarter, or I should say 16-point lead in the first quarter, and never looked back.
It's weird, though, isn't it? Like, by getting rid of the little engine that could identity, they kind of don't know who they are anymore. It's almost like, you know, they've been given another hand or something like that. Like, okay, I have that, and I can use that, but I don't quite know what to use it for, and I was really good at only using this one hand. Like, clearly, they're used to being a limited team, and because they know that and they can play the underdog role every night, like, there's clearly a growth process at work here, not to mention the up and down nature of the season and the front office turmoil. And I mean, my God, I've described it a number of times to friends, but this is the year of the kicked beehive. Like, the Bulls have just felt like a kicked beehive. There's a lot going on in there. There's honey still being made, but there's a lot of anger in the room. You can just kind of sense it, and you don't want to be there. I mean, I took maybe a month off. I think I took like mid-January to mid-February off because I'm like, I'm getting fired up every night. I can't handle this. What's the point? It's the same kind of thing where you don't know what you're going to get. And all that really matters is the playoffs. So it's different now, but it was just a bit much for me.
You're a better man than I am because I couldn't take those that month-long sabbatical off. And there's no doubt that that this Bulls team, the bipolar Bulls, have been going through an identity crisis, to say the least. But hopefully, looking forward, now that we finally have a full, healthy lineup, they're working the kinks out. I even joked on Twitter this evening that, maybe they threw games 4 and 5 just so that they can get more games, under the belt and get in rhythm.
Yeah, let's get some more minutes. Tibbs has not given us
Exactly.
enough. We need more. Let's really practice a bit more.
Hey, I do really want to highlight the veteran savvy of Mike Dunleavy. Some call it veteran savvy. Some may call it dirty play, because he was the dude that really set it off to start the game. I think he hit three early three pointers, some low key cheap shots, sacrificing his body to get Giannis ejected. What more can you say about Mike Dunleavy Jr.?
Dunleavy, look, every team needs an asshole, and it's the only way to put it. You need a guy on the team where when the fans of the other team see him score, they're just immediately pissed, and that's the one guy they don't want to see succeed. And Dunleavy's like the Duke guy. I think he owns it. I mean, Casey Johnson kind of, speaks his praises again and again at what a smart guy he is and what a funny guy he is. And you can just see like what that caustic sense of humor could do on the court, just knowing who to mess with. I mean, he was getting blasted on the court tonight. Dudes genuinely had enough. Like 5.5 games with Dunleavy was about 5.5 too many. And I get it. But when he, look, say what you want about his personality and that effect, but when he is making 3-point shots and when he's involved in the offense, more importantly, that changes everything for the Bulls. It spreads the floor. Rose and Butler have lanes to the basket. And look, Dunleavy, prior to the ankle injury, was an assassin. He was the 3-point threat the Bulls thought that McDermott would be. So he's crucial to their chances for a number of reasons, not to mention just being able to, rebound and make some really heady passes. I think he had 5 assists tonight. But he's a subpar defender. And I think, that's the one thing that he's heady, a team concept, it's great, but on an individual basis, he's a bit of a minus, and he's coming up against some really incredible athletes. So, when he can spread the floor, when he's making shots, and when the Bulls are looking to him to make shots, it changes really the structure of the offense.
Yeah, I don't have any stats to support this, but he's been quite the Mr. Reliable, not just in this series, but this season. You alluded to it already, but don't forget that stretch. And maybe this was the stretch that you kind of took off to reduce your Bulls anxiety and not have years shaved off your
I
life.
took the LeBron trip to Miami. I just chilled out for a second.
But there was a stretch during the season where he was out with that mysterious ankle injury, and the Bulls really struggled. And I like to joke around that it was Mike Dunn VP. He was the essential glue guy that kept the Bulls afloat, and I think the Bulls went 500 without him. So, shout out to Mike Dunleavy, really getting the job done tonight. And hopefully, it'll be interesting to see if the league takes a closer look at the MCW play
Right.
right at the beginning of the game, because if I'm trying to be as objective as possible, maybe I'd consider that a punch to the face.
It's tough, right? Like, I saw it too. It kind of looks like something. I don't know. I wonder if the NBA actually thinks in this way sometimes. Like, the series is over. It was a crushing. Like, there's no more effect to be had. We really don't want it to affect the next series. And you look at, and we'll talk about this, but J.R. Smith's, punch, that's unequivocal. That was another level of ugly, and you have to say something about that. But this, I don't know. Maybe I'm looking at it with biased eyes, but it seems like a little something, but nothing much to get worried about. So, you have to think that the Bulls will be there on Monday night against the Cavs with their full complement, but we'll see. It's a different league these days. Things get punished that they used to not.
Before we get into Bulls Cavs, were you nervous at all when Tibbs kept Joe in during the fourth quarter or any other key players, really? Because I think Taj played some extended minutes when the Bulls were up by a zillion points.
I just get mad. I'm not, it's like, can you just let me relax? I just want to enjoy the end of this game. I mean, look, Noah ended up with what, 25 minutes? Powell had 30. I think Jimmy had the most. He had 32, which for him is basically a night off. So look, the numbers are fine, but it was just unnecessary. It's never about the minutes with Tibbs. It's about the value of when you're doing it. Like, yes, the numbers bear themselves out. Yes, the players need to play. But look, you've got guys up there, and if one thing goes wrong, I don't know. I would say it's not Jim's fault. I would say this part is our fault as Bulls fans, that we're this damaged and cynical that, you know, if a guy's in 1 minute more than it feels like it's necessary, then it's a point of conversation. I feel for the guy. I think it's an unwinnable job. The last thing you'd ever want is for something to become close in a playoff game because you were worried about, you know, playoff minutes and how many guys are going to play when, you know, routinely in years past, Jordan would play 42 or 43 or Pippen would or anybody would. It doesn't matter. The W is what matters. So I don't know. I'm of the opinion that we're in the playoffs now. That was a little ridiculous because the game was so out of hand, but players got to play and there's nothing. It's not January. It's not November. It's, you know, we're in it now.
Yeah, you know, it was funny because I think midway through the second quarter, my concern shifted from, all right, there won't be a game seven, but now we got to worry about Zaza Pachulia, you know, undercutting someone and ending someone's career.
Totally.
The last, you know, half of the game, especially after Giannis, you know, basically truck stick.
That was crazy. That was crazy. Yanni just like had enough, man. So
yeah,
my girlfriend is watching with me and she's Greek and she, you know, she understands the dynamic, which is, excuse me, that she has to root for the Bulls, but she can also root for Yanni. And so Yanni went for his, you know, first and 10 tackle. And I'm like, all right, babe, Yanni's out. That's awful. That's terrible. To her great lament, she's like, it wasn't that bad. I'm like, no, that's you can't have that. And then there's Zaza, who I think I spent half of my time watching these Bulls games just tweeting about how terrified I was that he would do something awful. And he did. He did it to Nico. And then clearly there was some kind of communication behind the scenes because he was very quiet after that for the rest of the series of like, you got to calm it down. You're injuring people. Like, these are, you know, you're going to get suspended. You're going to hurt your team. At least that's my point of view, because after that happened, I don't know. He really seemed to be a little bit quieter, a little bit more in line with, you know, how other people play. But look, you know, no love lost for Zaza. He's a limited player. His teammates love him. You can see, like, you know, even the Bulls respect him because he's doing the best he can. And he just happens to be one of those guys that flails about and falls on knees and does things. He's like a 5-year-old running around with a weed whacker. You just want to go the other direction.
I'm just so happy and so thankful that we don't have to experience a reenactment of Zaza yelling for my game seven. Nothing easy. All right, so let's look ahead. Let's look ahead to Bulls Cavs. Many have deemed this a series between the top two teams in the East. Are you more excited or more stressed about the series?
I'm more excited. Look, there's a million reasons to be, but first and foremost, Derrick Rose hates Kyrie, and I don't know if that means as a person, but every time he plays against Kyrie, and I think this goes back to the Olympics, or the World Championships, excuse me, and the fact that Kyrie was starting over him, like, mm-hmm. as soon as the preseason began this year and the Bulls played the Cavs, D. Rose turned into somebody else, man. He loves sticking it to Kyrie, and so look, an engaged Derek, not that he hasn't been to this point, but an even more engaged Derek is great news. So from that perspective, I can't wait. The fact that Love is out, that I guess I'm like the rare guy that says I would rather the Bulls lose than have a major injury take out another team's player. I think we've had so many experiences with injuries over the years that I just, karma-wise, I can't accept that an injury might push us forward. But I'm looking at the lineups right now without Kevin Love, and they're delicious, and that makes me more excited. So, yeah, man, I just think this is the series we've all been headed towards.
You know, I think my buddy put it best when he said, I almost feel bad for not feeling bad about Kevin Love. Because it's one of those situations where, you know, us Bulls fans, we've dealt with this shit for the last 3 years. So it's I don't want to say that it's, you know, karma. I don't want to say that, you know, throw my hands up and say, oh, well, but, you know, we've been down that road. And as much as I want to be empathetic towards Cavs fans, like when you have to deal with it for 3 years, you know, tough shit, you know, and the other thing is, it'll be interesting. I don't know how much a difference the absence of Kevin Love is going to make.
Really?
Well, he's obviously, you know, part of their big three, and he's much better than I think what a lot of the rest of the roster, who they would have at the four. But he's been pretty nondescript in most of these Bulls-Cavs matchups. And I know that the regular seasons are pretty irrelevant, but he's had difficulty fitting in. You know, we talked about the Bulls having an identity crisis. I think the Cavs have somewhat of an identity crisis with trying to fit Kevin Love in. On top of that, now you have LeBron probably playing more at the four. And I think that the Cavs could potentially be more dangerous. You know, Kevin Love hadn't really made much of an impact against the Bulls during the regular season, and I just don't know how much of an impact he would have made in the playoffs. That's just my opinion. Maybe
no,
you can convince me otherwise.
I don't necessarily disagree. I think, look, you know, to your point, Kevin Love really didn't have much of an impact during the regular season, and I think that was, you know, as the Cavs kind of figured out the best way to use him and kind of just the way to integrate as a team as they figured out their special sauce. I think that was a part of it. You know, fourth quarters, you'd get taken out, really wouldn't be part of the offense. But as time has gone along here, I think it was like the last maybe dozen games of the season, as they really, really, you know, turned in their final form, they'd found a way to involve him in the offense. And again, they weren't putting him in the post. It was still kind of as a stretch four kind of model, but it was an extra move to their offense. You could have, you know, Kyrie come off the ball and LeBron set a ball screen. Then LeBron sends the defense scrambling another way. They scramble to recover. And then there's a LeBron bullet pass to Kevin Love on the opposite wing. And it's death. It's wide open. And that's that extra thing, that extra piece of their offense, that there just isn't that turn anymore. Okay, James Jones, something like that. But it's not the kind of dynamic player that you have with Kevin Love that could, you know, take that shot or move inside. So, look, from that perspective, they become a much less complex animal. And again, the matchups. I think that has so much to do with, you know, why the Bulls would have been in a tough, you know, a tough position if Kevin Love was in. And again, the playoffs are about matchups. When you think a starting lineup of, you know, Pau Gasol and Joakim Noah, like, who is it that's going to go out to the perimeter and guard Kevin Love in that instance? Who is it that's going to be able to chase him around? Right. Joe is, you know, he's hobbled. I think we can all admit that, you know, he'll have his nights. The 2 days of rest Bulls are the best Bulls. But, you know, chasing somebody around the perimeter, you know, it hurts the Bulls' defense. And that's just Pau sitting there at the rim with either Tristan Thompson or Mozgov, and he's going to get pushed around. So from that perspective, I think, you know, it's really to the Bulls' benefit that Kevin Love won't be a part of it, unfortunately.
Yeah, I think everything that you say is pretty fair. One thing you have to consider also, though, is that, you know, I would expect Tristan Thompson now to get more of, you know, those minutes that Kevin Love is leaving vacant. And, you know, Tristan Thompson killed the Bulls.
Destroyed.
Earlier in the year.
Destroyed.
Yeah, and I think Ricky O'Donnell, our friend, said it best when he tweeted out, none of this is going to mean shit if no one can box out Tristan Thompson.
I don't disagree with any of that. Ricky is one of the smartest guys I know when it comes to the Bulls, both emotionally and intellectually. He gets it in ways that most people don't. So listen to him because he says good things. But I'm looking at, like, lineup data right now, right? So they have, you know, a small kind of a go-small lineup where they put in James Jones and Iman Shumpert to go with Mozgov. And that's something the Bulls might see from time to time. But the Tristan Thompson lineups, like, you know, what is it? It's, let's see, that's going to be Kyrie, LeBron, maybe James Jones, Iman Shumpert, and then Tristan. Like, they don't seem to like to match up Mozgov and Tristan Thompson all that often. And I wonder about that. Like, if you look at the lineup data, there's some. Like, the lineups, you know, it starts to pop up. But in general, that's not something they like to do. I think they like to keep those guys separated. So, look.
So they like to go small is what you're saying.
I think that's the more likely scenario. And in that case, that's going to put the onus on Tibbs to go with Nico lineups. And you and I both know that he's reluctant to do that, that his druthers is to have Pau in there for big minutes and to have Joe in there for big minutes. And then, you know, how does Taj fit into the whole thing? So, look, there is – doesn't matter which of the four bigs you're looking at for the Bulls, none of them match up with Tristan Thompson and his ability to hit the offensive glass. That's going to have to be a team effort. That's going to have to be Jimmy Butler getting back and playing the glass the way he can. I mean, look, Jimmy's totally capable of 6 to 8 rebounds in a night, and I think that should be an emphasis, that the Bulls kind of give up the fast break a little bit so that they can, you know, protect their own backboard. We'll see. That's going to be an interesting part of the strategy for Tibbs coming into this.
Yeah, I'm just excited for the Bulls going from, you know, facing the giant octopus that is the Milwaukee Bucks with all of their arms and their athleticism to, you know, a much less defensive juggernaut in the Cleveland Cavaliers. I mean, going back to the whole Rose-Kyrie matchup, I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head a lot, but, you know, Rose is going from playing a 6'6" point guard who gave him a lot of trouble to attack the basket to now Kyrie Irving, who is no defensive stalwart at all. So I'm looking for Rose to have a big series. Hopefully the games are spaced out enough where we get 2 day rest, Derek.
He's the best.
Yeah. You know, the levels of Derrick Rose are like, you know, one is 2011 MVP Derrick Rose.
Yep.
Right underneath that is 2 day rest Derrick in 2015. But then all the way at the bottom is FIBA Derek.
And then a long tumble down, and then like you stub your toe a couple times, and then there's that other Derek. Yeah, so, that's tough. That's the tough part.
So no love for the series, no J.R. Smith for the first two games. What's the biggest concern you have about this Cavs team? You know, beyond stating the obvious that, you know, they very well have the best player in the series, arguably could have the best two players in the series.
Yeah, there you go. I think that's the biggest concern, that they have the two best players in the series, and that will bear itself out. And look, you know, it's a different player, but how much does this feel like Miami? You know, again, Chris Bosh is the big difference there. Chris Bosh, we've all come to understand later, because he was somebody who was easily made fun of and, you know, wasn't getting huge numbers because of the role that he played, was such an important part of what that Miami team was. And this Cleveland team does not have that. They don't have the experience. They're not the same defensive team. There's a lot of differences, and yet you have that top two offensive player option that was LeBron and Wade and is now LeBron and Kyrie. And the shots that Kyrie is hitting right now, the garbage that he can hit, it's supernatural. It's supernatural. And so I'm terrified of that. I'm terrified of the Bulls having that 12-point lead with a minute 45 left and feeling like we got this. And then all of a sudden just this rain of offense comes from the other end. And all of a sudden, you know, it's crunch time and the Bulls have to generate a possession. I'm really worried about that.
You're giving me very traumatic flashbacks to Game 5 of the 2011 Eastern Conference Finals.
Bingo.
Which I think you just basically described, where the Bulls were up, I think, 13 with
bingo,
2.5, 3 minutes left.
Bingo.
But I think this is a different animal than the Miami Heat. You know, I think they're a more traditional team in the sense that they're not positionless.
Totally agree.
Where LeBron has to play either the three or four. As great as Kyrie has been, I don't think he's 2010, 2011 Dwayne Wade.
That's a Hall of Fame player, so certainly not.
Right, and obviously we've beat this drum pretty often this podcast, but you know they don't have that Chris Bosh, and I think it's going to be absolutely critical that the Bulls win at least one of these first two games in Cleveland.
I would agree, and you have to think, you have to be optimistic about it. Look. It couldn't be set up better for the Bulls. They're healthy-ish, as healthy as they're going to be, and J.R. Smith is out for those two games in Cleveland, and Kevin Love is out for the series. So you have to think that they're going to have enough of an advantage, and they play really well away from home. I think we've seen it time and again this year. You know, the teams that they've played down to, it's really happened often at home. It's been a really kind of weird relationship with the United Center this year. So all those things, like the stars are very much aligned, and you would love it if they could steal one, and hell, if we're dreaming, both of the games, both of the early games in Cleveland, because that is, you know, that's on the table.
Yeah, you know, that's what was nice about tonight's game. It was actually a traditional away game. When you hear about, you know, the ratio of Bulls to Bucks fans,
yep,
you know, the games 3 and 4 were, it sounded like they were pro Bulls crowds, and the Bucks had to, I don't know. I feel like they manipulated the ticket selling system to make sure that it was mostly Bucks fans, but it ended up working to the Bulls' favor because, like you said, they play much better on the road.
They do, seemingly, and that's hard to figure out. We should see. I think it's going to be interesting to go into what do they call it? The Quicken Loans Arena? Is that what it's called now?
The Q is what the Clevelanders call it.
That's much cuter. Let's go with that. So the Q. I mean. You know, obviously, LeBron terrifies me. We should all be completely terrified of LeBron. And that's an interesting part of the equation in that if LeBron's playing the four, does that become a cross match? Because Jimmy historically has been the person that covers LeBron. I mean, obviously it's part of a team concept and they'll wait and see, but Jimmy tends to be the guy that's supposed to cover him. I guess Snell is going to help out a bit. You know, I'm trying to think who else might be a part of that equation. But in terms of one-on-one, that's it. And so, you know, how is that going to play out? How is it going to match up on the other end? You know, is LeBron going to be guarding Jimmy as well? Or, you know, is Cleveland going to have to scramble? That's one of the more interesting parts of the series.
Hey, Tony Snell, didn't he have a career game against LeBron right before the All-Star break?
Tony. I love Tony, man. The Snellevator. You don't know what glory you're going to get. Like, I think, you know, he's indicative of the season. Like, either he's got it and he's feeling confident and he's feeling good, or you can just see it where, you know, just the booty's a little tighter than it should be and the shots are short and kind of weird. I mean, he even misses shots a very specific way where it's either spot on swish or a very kind of like off. It's like far right and long or way right. Short. Like it's very clear what you're getting, you know, maybe 5 minutes into a Tony game. So
no one misses shots more badly than Tony Snell.
It's so weird for somebody who's an incredible shooter, like an incredible shooter of the basketball. That is right. So strange to me.
Zach, we'll wrap up with this.
Sure.
Fill in the blank. Bulls win this series against the Cavs if.
Bulls win the series against the Cavs if we get three spectacular Derrick Rose performances. Three.
All right, I'm going to have to check the schedule to make sure there's at least three games with 2 days rest in between them.
I really hope that's the case. And I can expand upon it. I mean, look, there's a lot of like bold predictions that could be made about the series. I think that, you know, it doesn't have to be all Derek. I just think that when Derek is that second level, when he is, you know, the player that we, not that he was, but that we know that he can be now, it allows everybody else to relax. It kind of touches everybody else on the team. You know, there have been these moments during the Milwaukee series where you're like, man, the ball should be going through Jimmy right now. But either emotionally or spiritually or whatever it is, knows that it needs to go through Derek in order to kind of set the rest of the team up. So, look, if they see Derek out there having fun, jumping around, making plays, I think everybody else gets to relax and it just becomes about playing basketball. And as soon as the narratives melt away for the Bulls, whenever the heat dies down, man, they're just ready for it. So, look, I'm going to make my homery prediction and say the Bulls in seven.
Wow, winning that game in Cleveland on the road, huh?
It's going to be one of those things. I think they'll actually they'll have the early lead. They'll be up 3-2 in the series. Cleveland will pull out the 3-3. And yes, the Bulls will win on the road for game seven. So that's my homery prediction. I feel I would not bet a dollar of my own money on it, but that's what I'm going to stick to. And it'll be fascinating. I think this one, for basketball purists, for people who love X's and O's and watching how coaches adjust, I think it's going to be one of the more fascinating series of the playoffs because the matchups are strange all over the floor, and there's a lot of shifting to be done with Kevin Love being out, with the Bulls kind of figuring out their rotation and what's best for them and matching up against the Cavs. I think it's going to be a great series.
I like where your head's at. I'm going to do you one better in terms of being a homer, and I'm going to go Bulls in six.
I love it. I love it.
So is this the de facto Eastern Conference Finals? Does the winner of this series go to the finals?
Wouldn't it be such a bummer if the Bulls win this series and then the Hawks beat them? I would not be able to handle that, man. That'd be way, way too much. Well, look, the Hawks are hurt. They're playing the Nets. I'm actually going to Nets-Hawks tomorrow night to see what happens with that series because it's a 10-minute walk from my house. You know, I don't know. There's a lot of talk out there right now about the Wiz. And look, the Wiz played really good against a team that totally quit. I watched the Wiz earlier this year. I think we all did. And there's a lot of talent there and they're playing quite well. But you have to feel like when they play a better team, it's going to go away. So my expectation remains for the Hawks to meet the winner of Cavs Bulls in the Eastern Conference Finals. And I have to be honest, if the Bulls can get through the Cavaliers, if they can get there relatively healthy, you have to like them to beat the Hawks and represent the Eastern Conference in the finals. And then let's not talk about what would happen in those finals because I don't think that's a good way to end a podcast.
Well, I'm pretty convinced that the Bulls are making the finals, and I'm not sure if I've told you why or if you've seen me tweet this out, but
definitely.
The Bulls are definitely making the finals this year, and that's simply because I've moved away from Chicago and wouldn't be able to go to a finals game. And what makes it worse slash better, you know, hopefully my wife can't hear me speaking on this podcast right now, but she's due on June 11th. And
no
I
kidding.
I did the research, and game six of the NBA Finals last year was on June 15th, or was scheduled to be on June 15th. So there could be some turmoil in the Nils household.
Oh my God.
If this baby arrives and it's just a few days before the Bulls could potentially not just host a finals game, but clinch an NBA championship, I may have to put my marriage and my parenthood on the line, making the trip up to Chicago and attending that finals game. We'll see. And really, that's really the only way that the season ends for me. The bipolar Bulls just, you know, totally screwing me over, trolling me by making the finals and making me leave my one-week-old son.
Man, you're just going to have the year of your life. Like, if the Bulls are in the finals and you're about to be a dad, I can't imagine a better scenario. So you're a winner either way.
That's true.
You don't have to count on the Bulls to do it. But, yeah, good luck getting some sleep during that time, man. Good luck.
Hey, Zach, it's been a pleasure. This was a lot of fun. Make sure you give him a follow at Twitter. Really fun Twitter follow. That's at @RightFieldSucks. I got to ask you, given that you're, you know, a resident Chicagoan, what do you got against right field?
I have no problem with right field. This is a question I've gotten a couple times. So I would say my Chicago sports fandom, especially growing up, was Cubs, Bears, Bulls, and that's kind of switched around over time and become this even thing. But as anybody who spent any time in the bleachers at Wrigley would know, if you're sitting in left field and it's the seventh inning and you're about 10 beers in and you need something to do, starting up a right field sucks chant is always one of the best things out there. And so that one day that I started my Twitter account and I was like, what should I call it? That's the first thing that came to mind, and it's been there ever since.
Well, awesome, man. Well, like I said, for all of you that are listening out there, make sure you give him a follow at Right Field Sucks. Zach, appreciate your time. Appreciate your insight. Definitely going to have you on in the coming weeks. Hopefully we'll be able to celebrate Eastern Conference Finals appearance and or championship.
I'm looking forward to it, man. Thanks for having me.
All right. You have a good one. That'll do it for this week's episode of The Bull Show. We'll catch you guys next week. Bull Show.